The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
So the first big agricultural show of the year is just a couple of weeks away.
Farmers-wise, we've got our Service to Agriculture Awards. We have a really strong showing of agricultural stands, machinery dealers, which is great to see. And we are working hard on having a grander livestock and heavy horse parade in the main ring this time as well.
Sadly, the problem of livestock worrying continues, but there's a new campaign to educate the public.
People are pretty good. I think one of the things is that people just aren't aware of the damage that the dog can do.
And we'll meet a farmer who's cycling over 1,000 miles for charity soon, taking an interesting route.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
And of course, we'll check the crops, and in a week when wheat prices have bounced, the grain and livestock markets. This is the Farming Programme podcast for the 28th of April 2024. I'm Steve Orchard. Hello. In the news this week, lawyers have been warning growers to check their contracts and stay informed as to how rain-induced shortfalls will be addressed with buyers. As we know, harvest prospects are predicted to be well below average, and some businesses will not be able to fulfil their contracts. Some of which may have a clause known as force majeure, which aims to excuse a party from their obligations following an event which is beyond their control, such as adverse weather conditions. Of course, not all contracts will have this clause, and some may have specific clauses relating to weather shortfalls. Check your contracts, talk to the customer, and seek advice are the three things to do, he said, teaching you to suck eggs. Discount supermarket Lidl has announced a £500 million investment package for pig producers, with a new pricing model for suppliers and farmers, which includes guaranteed farmer margins. It also introduced a pork producer group, which will see it invest in farm initiatives to decrease emissions and fund research into welfare enhancements. The National Pig Association welcomed the initiative and the supermarket's, quote, continued commitment to a sustainable domestic supply of British pork. RSPCA Assured has extended the pause to the rollout of its new welfare standards for laying hens for a further 9 months due to the concerns raised by farmers. The current standards can continue to be used until February 2025, while discussions continue. Four hare coursers have been ordered to pay out nearly £20,000 after they destroyed a Lincolnshire farmer's field while going equipped for hare coursing. This all took place in Ragby last October. The crime was reported to police, with officers quickly identifying the vehicle used with other equipment such as lamps, which are used in lamping to stun wild animals before dogs are set loose. Apart from the fine and costs, the four men, Eugene Minigan, Joseph Murta, Jay Poole and Jake Reedy, were also given a 10-year criminal behaviour order not to enter Lincolnshire with long dogs, and they'll do 100 hours of community service under probation, and they were disqualified from keeping dogs for a decade. There's just a couple of days left for nominations to the Farmers Weekly Awards. They close on the 30th. Congratulations to Ian Dawson and everyone involved in the recent Nettleton Vintage Tractor Run, which raised over £2,700 for charity. And best wishes to Meryl Ward, who continues her mammoth walk with another 6 hours today, setting off from Barton at 9:15 this morning, all in aid of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Chaplaincy. Updates and donations at lrac.org.uk. Now, what do you think is the most frequent type of rural crime? Theft? Fly tipping? According to the National Sheep Association, it's livestock worrying. With the better weather meaning more people will be enjoying the countryside, a campaign's being relaunched by our friends at the Farmers' Guardian to educate the public about the toll livestock worrying takes. Head of News and Business at Farmers' Guardian, Alex Black, thanks for joining us. How big a problem is it?
So it is a massive issue for farmers. We've got figures from NFU Mutual who suggest about more than 15,000 sheep are killed by dogs every year. And the cost to UK farmers is about £2.4 million. So those figures show how big a problem it really is.
And it's not just animals being killed, is it? If you've got, for instance, as we would have had just not that many weeks ago, pregnant ewes, for example, in a field, even if a dog doesn't attack the animal, it can cause other problems, can't it?
Yes, it can. So obviously there's the distress that it causes to the sheep. But like you say, when ewes are pregnant in the field, it can cause them to abort their lambs, which obviously is a massive issue for the farmer, then a massive financial issue as well as emotional.
Most of the public are pretty good. aren't they, when they go out for a walk in the countryside. But unfortunately, not all the public keep their animals under control. What do you, as part of this campaign, want the public to do?
So quite simply, just to keep their dog on a lead around livestock. Like you say, people are pretty good. I think one of the things is that people just aren't aware of the damage that the dog can do. Or, you know, they think they're only playing with them. And like we say, that they can cause damage without actually physically attacking them. So we just want them, when they're in somewhere around livestock, to put the dog on a lead.
You don't want to stop people taking a walk with their dogs in the country.
No, definitely not. You know, we want people to get out and enjoy the countryside. You know, that's great for farmers and for interacting with people. We want people to, you know, love going for a walk in the countryside, but we just want them to keep livestock safe whilst they're doing it.
Okay. And what can farmers do to help this along?
I think raising awareness, you know, people talk about it on social media. I know there's some pretty influential farmers on social media who've highlighted this issue. So it's talking to people, you know, when they're out and about and asking them to put their dog on a lead. That can be difficult sometimes because you risk people being not too happy about you telling them to do that. But we also send out signs to people, so people can get signs free from Farmers Guardian if they send us a stamped self-addressed envelope and put up these signs around the countryside, which, you know, tell people to put their dog on a lead.
Okay, so that's a really good idea, because as you say, it's good to communicate with people, but, you know, a farm could be many hundreds, thousands of acres, and you're not actually going to get out to talk to the person with the dog all the time. But yeah, signs to be put up. And is the campaign about awareness? Is that the main point of the campaign?
Yes, that's definitely the main point of the campaign. So we've been running this campaign for about 10 years. So, yeah, it's about educating the public. And like we say, we want people to know what damage their dogs can cause, because I think people just aren't aware of that. And, you know, when you are aware of that, people don't want their dogs to cause that harm. So once they're aware of that, hopefully it helps alleviate the issue.
And are you wanting farmers, apart from putting signs up and so on, to spread the word on social media as well?
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, videos and things, especially when people have got videos of what dogs are doing in fields, I think that, you know, they're really effective. And unfortunately, those horrible pictures that people share of what's happened to the sheep, nobody wants to see that. But I think it does kind of illustrate the issue, you know, in a way that you can't just by talking to somebody about it.
Yeah, they can be horrible but effective videos and photos like that. So how do we take part? Where do we go for more information about this, Alex?
So if you go onto the Farmers Guardian website, we have a Take the Lead hub on there, which contains all the information about the campaign, stories, obviously, from farmers that have been affected by it. So you can go to our website for that. And like I say, any farmers that are listening that want signs, if they send us a stamped self-addressed envelope, we can send them signs out for free.
Great stuff. Hashtag FG Take the Lead. Let's hope it's nice and effective. Alex, thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Time for a look at how the crops are progressing, and with some important agronomy advice for us, our crop doctor, Sean Sparling. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. Blooming spring 2024, the spring that keeps on taking. We're all desperately embracing our inner calm out here, thinking, well, it's still only April, it's early yet, but May's only just over there. If you look, you can smell it, it's so close. So a difficult spring is an absolute understatement. We're all in the same boat, though. We need to strap in and get ready for a bumpy ride. Ongoing cold days, struggling to get even into the high single figures, and cold enough for frost still by night, windy, blustery, slattery conditions causing all sorts of issues still on the land, not least because it's coinciding with the main dose of nitrogen going on. So we're seeing issues of significant crop scorch following liquid nitrogen applications onto fields that have been relentlessly hammered by these winds. Fortunately, it's mostly on leaves 4 and 5, which have been hit hardest in the main, although leaf 3's been hit hard too, where it's already out, very scorched, 3 or 4 inches on those leaves. So a lot of fields as you drive across the county looking like they've been regloned, and that scorch is mostly after liquid ferts, but not exclusively so. But it, as I say, at least that scorch is on the bruised tips of mostly leaves 4 and 5, which between them contribute about 2 to 3% of yield at most. But then again, it's never good to lose greenleaf area at any time of year, particularly this time of year in any season. So you can't avoid that sort of crop damage in these conditions, and it is everywhere as you drive about. And then to cap it all, we were white over again on Thursday afternoon after that hailstorm went through. So cold, windy days, still seeing frost by night. Two more good old proper rime frosts hit my house again this week. More rain again too, last Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, a bit over 17 mil for me again this week. Wet today too, I think, forecast. And along with the annoyingly gusty winds coming back, it's all just complicating things this spring. We're seeing physical damage from those hailstones on small tender crops like peas and sugar beets. So none of what's going on particularly conducive to the safe spraying of these small, newly emerging crops. So all in all, a bit of a bugger, or as they say in France, une pièce de bougère. So plenty of beets still to drill, peas still going in, spuds still to plant, few bits of barley still going in as well, along with the various SFI mixes that need putting in the ground. T0s on the wheats and barley's being scrapped by the day and being combined into a super T1 as leaf 3 begins to appear. Picking the opportunities and finding any days good enough to get any sprays on in good conditions or in time, just beating us this year because of the conditions. Fortunately though, not great conditions for the rapid growth of weeds or even the rapid emergence of polygonum weeds in particular. Plenty cold enough for polygonums really, and leaves not romping out at a rate of knots in wheats either for now. Filicron and leaf emergence all temperature linked this time of year, and with the growing day degrees not racking up too quickly, it is waiting for us in the main, although the ear is most definitely moving in the stems if you cut them open. Worth reminding ourselves too that when we get this delayed development and stressy plant growth conditions in seasons like this, and as the days start to march on, you'll see wheat and barley skipping growth stages. They'll quite often pop leaf 3 out at even growth stage 30, so never assume anything. Cut the plants open and physically count those leaves. So as I said, many people took the opportunity where they couldn't spray to go and apply the main dose of nitrogen, and with May just a couple of days away and hopefully some better weather coming with it, it'll let us get these revised T1s on in reasonable form next week, week after. And correctly hitting that T1 timing in winter wheat is absolutely vital. May in a couple of days, all of a sudden the awns will be shown in the winter barley. You can already find them in some pieces. So several growth regulator timings will have already gone for Burton in winter barley. Again, assume nothing. Make sure you're still safe with any mixes you've got hanging on the wall ready to go. Winter wheat widely has leaf 3 out, as I say. In fact, leaf 2 starting to poke out in some of my more forward mid-September drillings now. Leaf 3 more than just beginning to poke out as well in most wheat fields, even those which appear to be more backward in many cases. And with levels of yellow rust increasing and that Septoria tritici in particular beginning to become rather more worrying, where the T0's delayed or even now abandoned, we do soon need to fall into a much more settled spell of weather to let us protect these crops in the manner to which we and they have been accustomed over the last few dry springs. Don't get me wrong, things aren't out of control yet, but it just won't take that much more of this weather before Mother Nature becomes way more in control than we are. And we haven't had a season like that for a few years. 2012 springs to mind. There are some very, very impressive new fungicides out there on the market. Sit down, do the maths, do the numbers and work it out and pick the right one for your situation. Stem-based browning in most fields as well, mostly fusarium, but some of that will most definitely be eye spot, and that's a disease we really haven't seen much of in the last few seasons either. But it is a disease that can cause significant lodging if you leave it unchecked. So with some growth regulator timings already running out, it is most certainly a disease you shouldn't ignore and you should be aware of and be proactive against. And remember, there are very few varieties in the ground with anything remotely like a decent level of eye spot resistance. So, and as the conditions have been pretty near perfect for eye spot, your choice of T1 should take that into consideration too. A robust dose rate of SDHIs, eye spot active triazoles, yellow rust active triazoles, multi-site inhibitors. It looks to me like it's going to be a very high disease pressure year, and our mission as ever is to coat and protect leaf 3 and to manage stem-based disease, and we just have to wait it out and grab these opportunities as they appear. It's been frustratingly to me largely because those opportunities have been all but non-existent, and because these conditions we're sat in at the moment, you know, it may well be that less than optimum opportunities have to become the norm. Things are going to move really quickly when they do start, so just stand by for action. The frosts and hailstones won't wouldn't have helped cotyledon and newly emerging sugar beet crops at all this week. There's most certainly a degree of tipping on this emerging small cotyledon sugar beet plants as a result of those frosts in some of these fields. So it's important not to go charging in with herbicides while there's still a risk of frost or while they're under stress, particularly while the sugar beet plants are so small and tender as they start to emerge. Also, always use a fine quality spray on sugar beet for weed control. Low dose, low volume. You should avoid bubble jets and air induction nozzles on the small weeds. The droplets tend to be too big and you'll see a drop off in levels of control. You want a 110 degree flat fan O3. That's the optimum nozzle in sugar beet, really. Fair bit of mouse damage appearing as well out there as I walk about, but they're not quite as clever as they think they are. They often crack the seed coat and drop the seed and then move on and do exactly the same thing with the next one. So if it's still wet out there, that seed should still grow. Damage always looks way worse than it is, and there's not much you can do about mouse damage anyway. Botrytis and grey mould's a real threat in oilseed rape if you've got any left. Petal fall rapidly underway, so a protectant fungicide on those petals is in order now. May on Wednesday, surely there has to be a change in the weather soon, doesn't there? Maybe if Labour get in, they'll nationalise it. Let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks as ever, Sean. Sean Sparling, Sparling Agronomy Services, back same time next week. The first big country show of the year is only a couple of weeks away. We meet a farmer cycling over 1,000 miles, following an interesting route for a farming charity. And how are the markets doing? Find out on the Farming Programme podcast.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
This is the Farming Programme podcast. I'm Steve Orchard. The first big country show of the year is just a couple of weeks away. Once again, the Newark Showground hosts the Nottinghamshire County Show. Really looking forward to it. So I called in to meet show manager Elizabeth Halsall. Nice to be back at the showground. Empty at the moment. It's all very peaceful out there. A couple of weeks' time, it definitely will not be. The 139th Nottinghamshire County Show, which we're all looking forward to enormously. Just look back quickly. How was last year?
It was fantastic. It does seem quite a while away. But yes, we had good entry levels. The weather was reasonably kind to us and a good level of visitors. So all round a huge success.
OK, and we're one day again this year on the 11th of May. So what have we got lined up?
Well, I really need to mention, actually, our livestock competitions aside. We were concerned with the weather that we've had and the autumn and the winter that farmers have had to endure, whether we would get the level of livestock entries. But I'm pleased to say we have, and more, actually. So livestock competitions are really strong. We've introduced a Highland cattle class for the first time. We've got a couple more sheep classes. The Castle Milk Morrit and Shetland sheep are in the schedule this time. And a plethora of young handler classes, including one for 7 years old and under, because our handler classes last year were so popular. So really pleased with livestock entries.
That's good, isn't it? Because, as you say, it could, given what we've had to put up with this last 6 months, really have devastated the show.
Absolutely. Without our livestock and equine competitions, we don't really have an agricultural show that we try and put on. So to have that level of support and then the stewards coming forward to manage the classes on the day is really good news.
OK, what else have we got for farmers?
Farmers-wise, we've got our Service to Agriculture Awards and Long Service Awards, so we're recognising a number of individuals. We have a really strong showing of agricultural stands, machinery dealers coming forward, which is great to see. And we are working hard on having a grander livestock and heavy horse parade for, in the main ring this time as well.
OK, plenty for farmers, plenty for families as well, of course.
Yeah, families are a mainstay of our visitor. So highlights for them are acts in the main ring. So we've got the Imps motorcycle display, or stunt team, I should say. It's a community group. They're all from 8 through to 18 going to be telling us or showing us what they can do on the day. We've got the Young Farmers back with their lawnmower racing, which is a finale for their season. We've got the Sheep Show coming back. It's not been with us for a few years. And we also have a flypast again this time.
Yes, I saw that. That is going to be really, really exciting. Of course, with anything like that, it's weather dependent. want with a fly pass, particularly. You don't want a load of cloud on the day, but inevitably the show itself is a little bit weather dependent, but there's a lot of it indoors as well, isn't there?
There is. This time we've got a great community zone in the George Stevenson Hall where all local organisations and charities are coming together. Lots of have-a-go activity. Oh, and in Lady Eastwood Centre, one of my favourite halls to go into is the Floral Arts, our Make, Bake and Grow competitions, and also the Growing Hub.
And we've got the Village Green.
We have. So we're hoping that the Morris Standises are joining us this time. And we're looking at the Young Farmers Tug of War competition as well.
And plenty of food, I notice, which is my favourite area.
Well, and mine as well, I have to say. Next door to the Lady Eastwood, that is. So, yes, full of local producers. That area is actually chock-a-block with food companies coming and supporting the show.
And some charity involvement in this?
As always, we do like to support all our local charities. So Links and Knots Air Ambulance will be here. We've got a big police and fire service presence as well. And as I mentioned, in the community zone, all of our sort of local charities will be exhibiting in there.
And of course, the Newark and Knots Agricultural Society is a charity itself, isn't it?
It is. And actually, some people forget that. Yes, we do own the showground, but we are here to promote agriculture and celebrate it. And that's what we plan to do on show day.
And of course, we have a new show chairman this year. Richard Sheldon has stepped down. You have a new show chairman. What can you tell me about Des Allen?
Well, he's our neighbour, for one. So he farms next door to the showground. He has been long associated with the show since he was a child, actually. He was the livestock steward last year and has come forward to be our show chairman. He's a local pig and arable farmer and hugely supportive of the show, but also with passion to actually grow it and appeal to farmers and a family audience.
And very keen on Buy British, I gather.
Absolutely, yes. As with all our farmer members, actually, and that's something that we do try and support wholeheartedly.
Brilliant. It's first big farming and agriculture show of the year, so just tell us the date, the time, where we go for tickets, etc.
It's on Saturday, the 11th of May. It's at Newark Showground. Ticket information's on the website. We've got discounted tickets up until the 3rd of May, and thereafter will be gate prices. If you go to nottinghamshirecountyshow.com, you'll find all the information there.
All right, Elizabeth, looking forward to it. You'll have another fantastic show.
Thank you very much, Steve.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock from Masons Rural at Louth auctioneer Ed Middleton. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Steve. This week I'm starting off with our special second spring store cattle and breeding cattle sale on Friday the 19th of April. An excellent entry. Just a few highlights to mention. PG and RJ Rutter of Skegness sold breeding bulls to $2,950. Cows and calves topped at 2,320 for C.A. Mottram and Sons of Lincoln. Onto the stalls, J.E. Thilby of Kexby and also Pitcher Farms were joining the top spot in the store cattle. John Thilby topped with a Blue Cross heifer at 1,770 and Pitcher Farms of Boston topped with a Pedigree Limousin heifer selling for £1,770 also. Moving on to Monday's market, we had a small entry due to a lot of vendors being shut down on the 6-day standstill regarding from Friday. Top spot this week in the steers were JNS Brooks of Strubby at £1,738.28, and they also topped the pence per kilo at 286.5 pence per kilo. OTMs this week topped at 199.5 pence for Shaw Brothers of Binbrook. Moving on to the sheep, we're starting to see a few more spring lambs in SQQ in the new seasons were 402.86 pence per kilo and an all-in average of £175.50. Top spot were T&I Hunter of Fotherby, which sold to £185, and in the pence per kilo were NF and F Stones of Louth at 437 pence per kilo. Moving on to the prime hogs, we had an SQQ of 370.1 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of £171.59. Numbers really starting to dry up now, but trade still holding strong for the best top-end well-fleshed hogs. Top spot this week went to GP Robinson of Tetford at £209. And top spot in the pence per kilo were MA Smith of Theddlethorpe at 402 pence per kilo. Moving on to the Cullews, this week we had an average of £120. A very mixed bag on offer with a lot of post-lambing problem ewes. This week, top spot went to Johnson Farming of Market Raisin at £188. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. And with a look at a bouncy grain market, Open Fields' Kit Dickinson. Morning, Kit.
Well, good morning, Steve. Wheat prices bounced at the start of the week on a combination of factors rather than anything specific. Funds took some cover against their near short positions. Russian attacks on Ukrainian Black Sea ports intensified, whilst weather concerns are raised in the US Southern Plains, Southern Russia and Eastern Ukraine. There are also fears that the conflict in the Middle East could spread. All in all, a cocktail of uncertainty, with traders reducing their exposure to risk. Russian exports continue at a steady pace, despite Ukrainian attacks on oil refineries within Russia, whilst Ukraine also maintains its export momentum via their new corridor. There are reports, however, that the Ukraine grain stocks are running low as the end of the season approaches in their quest to generate cash to fund the war. Ukrainian wheat and maize production are forecast to be 6 to 6.5 million metric tonnes combined in 2024-2025. The EU was, again, unable to produce any import-export data due to the ongoing technical issues. The USDA publishes its first attempt on the global supply and demand balance sheet in their May 24 report, which are likely to be based on best-case scenarios using trend yields, so they can spend the next 12 months adjusting them. The likelihood that they will produce a bullish set of numbers is quite low. Once the report is out of the way, the market will benchmark any forecasts against the USDA numbers for the foreseeable future. Looking at barley, premiums have held firm over the last week. The market is at an impasse currently. Very little appetite for sellers to commit, matched with little interest for the maltsters as well. Finally, we see the bulk of the English crop in the ground, with reports at the cut-off being the end of this week. 881,000 hectares still looks slightly on the high side. The eventual crop number will now come down to the next 12 weeks of weather. Cold and wet conditions have not given the best starts for the crop, with germination being slow and nitrogen uptake sluggish. Late planted crops in many parts of the country will undoubtedly have lost yield potential. The same can be said for Europe. The crop in France is mostly in, but parts are coming under disease pressure. Scandinavian growers have also been delayed, but they do have time on their hands. Looking at oilseed rape, Matif rapeseed this week started near the highs, trading back up to €460 a tonne, but has struggled to keep the momentum as other oilseeds have declined. After rallying to one-year highs early in April, palm oil has been sharply down as the concerns around tart supplies have eased. The market was supported earlier in the week after Malaysia's meteorological agency issued a level 1 hot weather alert in over 10 areas on Monday evening, which has the potential to negatively affect the palm oil yields. So moving forward to prices this week, feed wheat for May 175 to 185, with a good rise into July 186 to 196. August, feed wheat off the combine 182 to 192. November, 197 to 207. Milling wheat premiums for old crop are circa £60. Old crop barley 157 to 167. Moving forward to July, August off the combine 158 to 168. And November, 175 to £185. Malting barley premiums for new crop are circa £30. Oilseed rape for May, 347 to 357. And for forward prices going into new crop, please do speak to your Open Field farm business manager.
Thanks, Kit. We'll check the weather in a moment. But first, Nick Bragg joins us, Somerset farmer, cafe owner, wedding host, with schools and industrial labs on site. And next month, charity cyclist. You're clearly busy. How on earth have you got time to go cycling for 1,000 miles?
At this moment in time, I'm not quite sure.
tell us about what you're doing now. I know you're cycling 1,000 miles, but you're doing it in a slightly different way. I mean, many people cycle John O'Groats to Land's End or vice versa. You're going a rather different route.
We are. That's correct. To be honest, we did look at Land's End to John O'Groats. But as you said, everyone's done that. One of the main reasons for this challenge is to engage with as many people as we possibly can, to give the greatest awareness to the charity. So starting at the Northumberland County Showground and then working our way down through the country to the Suffolk Show, calling off at farm shops and farms, and then ending up at the Royal Cornwall Show. We're trying to hit it in a way that we'll pick up the biggest audience as we possibly can.
Absolutely. And in our area, you're calling at Sharman's in Grantham.
We are, that's right. Hopefully that area will be a bit flatter than some that we'll have travelled on before.
Well, I was just going to say that. Looking at the route, this isn't exactly a nice flat cycling route, is it?
I haven't properly looked at that route.
Well, I had a quick look. There's some big hills in there by the looks of it.
There are, yes, particularly as we leave Yorkshire, definitely.
Yeah. Have you been training a lot for this?
Yes, I have, really, since just before Christmas. And then ever since, it's been ranking up. We've got a great company on site, that personal trainer. So combination of cycling, running and gym work as well.
And you're talking about support. You're going to be supported on the route by Crone. What are they doing?
We are. They've basically helped us pull the event together. But we're ultimately using our forager called a Big X, which will be supporting the route, really, for a way to promote the challenge better. Because, you know, who wants to look at someone sat on a bike, whereas there's a chance to look at a big shiny bit of kit with some nice bit of writing on the side of it. So, yeah, we'll be supported by the Harvester and Crone right the way through.
Excellent. Now, of course, this is all for charity. So just tell us what the charity you're doing this for and why.
Yeah, the charity is the RABI, or the Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution. They help farming and people within the farming community with any challenges that they may be faced with, and really coming out of a very difficult autumn and winter. Things are and have been incredibly tough, and, you know, people struggling with loneliness and mental health issues. This is where the RABI can help, supporting those people. So it's just, being a farmer myself, it's a way to try and support and help others.
Brilliant. And how much do you think you might raise?
Our target at the moment is 10,000. We did a similar challenge back in 2019. I cycled across Canada. That was 3,000 miles in 30 days. And incredibly, we raised £30,000 then. So,
well, by comparison, this should be an absolute doddle, really, shouldn't it?
Well, there's more hills than this one. Even though we went over the Rockies, I think this is a hillier, more challenging route. But more fun because of the places that we're stopping, and hopefully people will be engaging more.
Now, I commend you for doing this. And if somebody'd like to support you financially or in any other way, where could they find out more information, Nick?
Really, the best way would be to follow it on social media or through the website, Frogmurray Green Farm. There'll be a link there that'll take you through the charity event and also to a Just Giving page.
Lovely. Well, I wish you well, Nick. Just tell me what's the date you're starting again?
I think it's Sunday, the 26th of May, leaving from the Northumberland County Showground, and actually finish on the 6th of June.
Well, I wish you every success, Nick. I hope you raise loads of money. We'll catch up when you've done it all and see how it all went. All the very best, Nick.
No, that's very kind of you. Thank you so much.
So many people do so much for charity in this industry. I don't think I know another industry quite like it. Brilliant.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
After last week's cold snap, it does get warmer after a frosty night for Sunday following this morning's heavy rain. It's another mixed week with some rain midweek. Winds start south to southeast, backing more northerly for the second half of the week, when they also turn a bit gusty. Daytime highs in the mid-teens Celsius, and after tonight, overnights in upper single figures. Next week on the Farming Programme podcast, we'll look back at the recently completed sugar beet campaign, along with the rest of the week's farming news. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.